You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield Rapids, Neil Atkinson with Andy Heaton producing with Harry Pryor, Paul Senior and Ian Ryan for this one. If you haven't downloaded our app yet, with the rest of this season on the horizon, I had a moment yesterday, Paul, I don't know about you, where I suddenly went, oh, it's the cup final next Saturday. Like, I was almost like, someone should have said, it's the cup final next Saturday. It's the cup final next Saturday.
Do you know when the managers talk about going, like, one game at a time, the way these fixtures have been coming out, I've been having to, I've been going, like, so what am I doing? Oh, Tuesday, yeah, Birmingham Tuesday. What's after that? Oh, and then you go, oh, yeah, it's the cup final. It's a nice problem to have, isn't it?
It's a great problem to have. So, cup final on the horizon, can't wait for that one. Then another cup final in Paris. Then there are three remaining league fixtures from which if Liverpool take 9 points, they do need a favour, we'll come on to that. Before the last league game of the season, the Anfield Rap will be live in Mountford Hall. You can get tickets from Eventim, or if you go to theanfieldrap.com/tour live. I've used that with unbelievable confidence that link is working for this purpose. I do not have that confidence. So go to our Twitter if you're struggling in any way, shape or form. I'd really like to sell that out in an ideal world ASAP so I don't have to talk about it anymore. I also want you to buy tickets for our London live show. And I really want you to do that. If you've been on an hour, please do it this week. And the reason why is because the fella who works the promoter who we've been working with on it supports City, and I really don't want to have to speak to him this week in an ideal world. So if people could buy tickets for the London show and take the pressure off me having to ring them up and ask them where the numbers are. I quite like them just to message me and say, oh, it's all been boxed off, don't worry about it. And then if they do go on and win the league, I can just sort of avoid them for a period of time. So that'd be great. So the London live show on the 9th of July in Hackney will be brilliant. It'll be a great one. It's difficult at the minute, in the same way as Paul's saying about getting your head into it, because I feel like the 9th of July is almost like another country. Like, you've got to get your passport on you to get to the 9th of July, but it is there, and you will be looking for something brilliant to do with that Saturday night. And Liverpool, believe it or not, will be back in pre-season at the time of the live show. Sorry, Ian, I know. Season starts on August the 6th.
Yeah, I've just said it before.
It doesn't feel true, does
don't
it?
Don't believe it.
Can't be. All right, then. Liverpool 1, Tottenham Hotspur 1, Harry Pryor. You can't win every week, absolutely every week. No one has ever won every week. No one's ever won 38 out of 38. No one's ever got to all cup finals and won the league at the same time. So you can't win every week, but my God, it was frustrating. They want to frustrate. They've got good players to do it, but we play into their hands.
Yeah, you can't win every week, and that we all know that, but at the moment we all thought we could win every week, and that's maybe what's the most annoying thing, is that whenever anyone talks about this Liverpool team, they talk about them finding a way, because they so often do find a way, if that's, you know, regardless of whether they're playing against a low block, regardless of whether they've got more space in behind to exploit, they always seem to get the job done in the end. And we've seen them multiple times this season work that out through the period of the game, and especially in the first 45, they seem like they're not entirely sure how to play the opposition. They come out in the second half, we saw that against Everton, for example, and then they just managed to get the job done. I felt like that was going to happen in the second half against Tottenham. It didn't happen. Obviously, they scored first, and then you're left in a position where you're trying to claw back. against a team that is just trying to waste so much time and sat so far back they might as well have been in the cup by the end of it. It was ridiculous. So yeah, didn't find a way through, didn't get the 3 points, two dropped, and we know it's a big two to be dropped, but you can't win every week.
You can't win every week. But Paul, had you mentioned there this idea of it'll change a little bit at half time. I had a look, went through all the events in the game for a stat show. They'll come out second half. The first two shots they have are from distance, from Trent and from Thiago. Two of your smart players, frankly. And Thiago has his shot. He's got eight men between him and the goal, and he's about 25 to 30 yards out when he has this attempt. Gets blocked, obviously, as so many of them did. But that's what I mean. Like, second half, all right, it's time to do it a bit differently. It's time to reset. It's time to not play into their hands. That's what they wanted Liverpool to do. And as I say, Trent and Thiago there, and I'm naming them, to, you know, we all know that Thiago is one of the cleverest players you've ever seen in your life. But Liverpool, to me, they got swamped into doing what Tottenham wanted them to do at all phases of the game. And that was our downfall.
Yeah, there was a bit of panic in the whole performance, I felt. A bit of desperation and whatnot. But it sort of had that undertone of 13-14 Chelsea game where all of a sudden the pressure was on. And we hadn't just blitzed them in the first 10 minutes. And then we started resorting to stupidity. And there was so much frustrating throughout the game. I felt from individual performances to stupid shots, to just not doing what Liverpool do, trying to go for the smart pass rather than the one they would normally go for. And one of the things since Diaz came, one of the things I've sort of credited Liverpool for was always having the patience and taking the time, working the team out and finding the right pass and making it work. And this all felt a little bit hurried on Saturday.
They've got a back five, and it is a back five, apart from the very brief moments where it suits them, and it's worth saying Sessegnon plays his part in the goal. But it is a back five. It's then a midfield four. And then it's Kane almost playing like a number 10 rather than a number 9. He's almost an attacking midfielder more than a centre forward. So we're not saying there was tons of space. We're not idiots. You know, the manager's sub there when he takes Sessegnon off and brings Sanchez on, moves Davies to be left back at that point in a back five. It's four centre halves on the pitch, three centre midfielders, and then a little bit of other stuff. So we know that that's what they're about. We know that that's what it is. It is, to me, the frustration of not taking that extra moment, not taking that extra touch, not looking to find a little bit of a route through. Liverpool, to me, just became just a bit of a blunt instrument, if I'm honest with you. And that's, in hindsight, you know, you can have 20 minutes of that because a blunt instrument sometimes gets the job done. But for me, other than the first 10 in both halves, it was effectively 70 minutes of blunt instrument.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It was a game going into it, Neil. I think I said to you on the show on Thursday, it's all live, that I was really concerned about it. It was one of them where, going back a number of weeks, you see Spurs on the fixture list and you think, that could be a problem, you know, because they've got form of going to other big sides. You think about Man City and just frustrating them. Obviously, they've done City home and away this season. They've took points off us, albeit when we go there, we've got quite a weakened team, certainly in the middle of the park. So it was one where you just thought, after so many games, such intensity. I mean, there's a reason that so few teams do the treble and no one does the quadruple, because you have to be at your absolute best pretty much all the time when it gets to this stage of the season. And you're asking a lot of the same lads to keep going and keep going. So it was a fixture that was fraught with danger, I thought. And it plays out that way. I've got no issue, by the way, with how Spurs set up and play.
No, not
I've got
all.
No issue at all with it. Because if they
wouldn't
try...
You wouldn't want to watch it every week.
No,
I've got no issue
watch
with it.
And that's a separate conversation. That's a conversation for them and their supporters. But
they don't play like that every week?
No, they couldn't if they were, you know, up against a smaller team. But you've seen them get picked off sometimes by a Brighton, for instance,
they've had two games
where the onus has been on them.
Brighton and Brentford recently, they don't score and they don't actually create a good chance. So I think they have got elements where they are set up, not to do purely that, but to do more of that every week. And that's something they're going to have to address if they're going to want to get 80 points.
Well, people were using that and saying, well, you know, I've watched them get picked off by Brighton, but they were never going to come and play like that against us. And, you know, I've got no issue with it, because when I watched them go to City, I had no issue with it then. I was absolutely fine with them having 28% possession that night because it served the purpose. So what I don't necessarily like is some of the stuff that you see play out in the second half. And I think there's players now who are, and you've got to be careful with some of this, but there's players who are using the head injury thing, I think, as a way to go down and waste a bit of time. And Højbjerg does it second half. And as I say, you've got to be careful with this kind of narrative, but it didn't feel like he was just looking to waste a little bit of time. And that's where the referee...
I think it's getting... So I think there's...
It probably is that, Neil.
I think we've got to be careful on the time-wasting thing, because I think we do it just simply as though sides are just trying to run down the clock. I think they're trying to break your momentum, break your 100%. Rhythm, and also get themselves and their teammates a breather. If I go down here literally and take up 45 seconds, it's 45 seconds where, for instance, Bentancur gets to breathe in and out, because he's never played at Anfield like this before. And I think this is why I think the idea of, oh, just sort it so it stopped the clock, listen, it might make things different and it might make things better, but I think you'd actually see more breaks in a really weird way, because there'd be more players going, well, you just stop the clock then, referee. You can just stop the clock here because my teammates are getting a breather. They're going cold. They feel like they're up. So we'll just kill time out of the game, and not just to waste the time, but to get a breather. And I think that's what I thought I was saying over and over, because Spurs players in the breaks, they were like, the hands on the knees, this is hard, and all that.
I really take your point there, though, Ian. I think it's naughty taking privilege of that rule, because it's been brought in for player protection, and what they're doing there is putting pressure on the referee. Categorically has to go and check if the player's got a head injury or not. However, I think if you're taking advantage of that, something that's been brought in, you know, there's charities about heading footballs or whatever, there's all sorts of player protection stuff that should have been improved and is improving, but I think if you're using that for sport and gain, I think it's naughty.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. But I think overall, Neil, you know, back to the point that everyone's made so far, I think Liverpool can look at themselves and think, you know, did we do enough? And I think the answer to that is no. You know, there's some poor choices. Actually, I think we started the game pretty well. I think as a crowd, we started
pretty well.
Yeah. You know, everyone's up for it. The atmosphere is really bouncing. And the players, you know, come out with loads and loads of purpose, loads of intensity. But then, you know, back to that, is it one step, is it one game too far? And it quickly becomes, I should say, a bit of a grind. And as I say, our Spurs set up obviously facilitates some of that. And in the end, you're just thinking, what if?
On the idea of, I want to come back to one game too far, and we'll come back to it towards the end. For me, Harriet, Liverpool actually, and the manager cited afterwards, and I think he's right too, Liverpool swarm Tottenham out of possession absolutely brilliantly. Yes, they get one goal from the counter, and they have maybe a couple of other forays, one of 1-0, I hasten to add as well, where they look as though they could hurt us. But Liverpool do a great job, I think, of penning them in. They don't look leggy in that regard. They look switched on, they look sharp, they look like they're doing it right. And that's why, to me, I think it's a really interesting little thing, where I don't think it's as simple as you end up with this one sort of one thing. Is it one game too far, or is it this, or is it that? Because there's massive amounts of dominance from Liverpool. It's just without cutting edge.
Yeah, and out of possession, I actually thought we looked really good. Like you mentioned, our press worked really well. It didn't look like anyone was particularly tired. I thought some of the tackles Fabinho were putting in were impressive. And our line was still sitting quite high, although for some reason the sort of offside track we usually played didn't seem to work. I don't think they got any offsides, did they, yesterday in behind, which feels quite surprising because that seems to happen every week. But it was in possession for me that was more the problem, because if you look at Liverpool players and how they play, they're really good with close control. Like they never seem to struggle when they've got players straight on them. They seem to be able to get the ball out. Someone like Thiago, you see it every week, players are straight on him, he manages to find the space around players. It felt like none of them felt like they had time on the ball, and because they didn't feel like they had time on the ball, they were just passing it, you know, trying to just cross it in, trying to fling it into the box. It just wasn't working. I mean, the crosses, I think it was 47 crosses, 21 by Trent, and only 6 found a teammate. I mean, that's just a problem, isn't it? And especially when you've got players of their stature in the box who are just heading everything away and blocking everything away. But like you said, I didn't necessarily think it was us out of possession that was the problem. It was when we had possession and we were panicking and we didn't know what to do with the ball. We were trying different sort of combinations, but not managing to find a way through. And a lot of that started from midfield for me.
The wider picture, I thought the crowd was great at the final whistle, Paul. I think it would have been easy for it to feel like people were slumped going out of Anfield. That really wasn't the demeanour, I thought, of the crowds. I actually think you can understate the importance of this. The crowd was first and foremost, we'd watch them all put a massive shift in and not really drop their intensity level. There was questions about decision making, as we've already alluded to. But I think also there was a real sense of, you've been absolutely brilliant, keep going, keep your heads up, and we'll go from there. And I think that should hopefully make a difference to them as well. It was far from an Anfield crowd that was disappointed in them. Disappointed with the result, yes, but not disappointed in them, and I thought that was just great to see, in a sense.
Yeah, well, listen, I think, was it the Brentford game at home where Klopp comes to the end and sort of gives it the big, and it was like, this isn't over, you know, we need you to stay with us. And I think that has to be reciprocal at some stage, and I think I sort of felt like it was, you know, where, you know, the result hurt at the weekend, of course, it did probably hurt everyone in that ground in equal measure, but the attitude is, we're fighting till the end and we'll see what happens. And, you know, without sounding Kevin Keegan, they've got to go to Villa, they've got to go to Wolves, they've got to go to West Ham. I think we're now in a, we've got to treat this like we're in a shootout for goal difference, and that's the way of, that's the only way I've been approaching this all weekend, really, is that if someone can beat them, then we've just got to outscore them. That's why that 5-0 yesterday was so disappointing for me, as it gave them a real head start in that what is a straight shootout, you know. So that's the best we can hope for at this point. I don't see City getting beat twice, but they might get beat once.
They've still got to drop points, haven't they? They still had to drop points before. Now they've just got to mess up a little bit more. But how can you, at the end of that game yesterday, feel disappointed? Like, I feel like there's no point in this season, especially since the turn of the year, that you can genuinely look at that team and that manager and say, right, I'm disappointed here. Like, you just can't, can you? Especially with everything we've got coming up. I think we'll all be at Wembley on Saturday not thinking about that, will we? So
the other thing is, as well, there's a reason that this quadruple doesn't get done.
Exactly.
It's so exhausting. You know, I was texting you last night. It's exhausting for us as a fan base. So imagine how the players feel. It's unbelievable in terms of it's just relentless games. And then I'm getting to games and I'm going, what's it? Oh, I've got to get myself up to it. I feel like I need recovery days, you know, a little ice bath or something. But I think we've got to stay with them when we sort of got to hope for the best. Stranger things have happened.
Well, the other part of this as well is this is why in the end, Ian, and I think all the way through, we can talk about them frustrating us. There is another issue, which is they just carry a threat. You can't be complacent about the threat that they carry on the counter. You've got to plan for it. It's not like playing Watford where you can go, oh, sod it then, you know what I mean? If they manage to get the ball up the other end, we'll just smother them one way or the other. They do carry a threat. And 1 point is well better than zero. Zero would have put us in a position where we'd be looking for two things to go our way between now and the end of the campaign. One means that we are still looking for one slip, only the one.
Yeah, and I think on their threat, again, you know, back to the point I made before, you know, it was a game that worry me because of the threat, because you've got quality players at the top end of the pitch where if you do push on, you know, they can punish you. And I think in Kane and Son and Kulusevski as well, to be fair, who's coming and been a great addition, they've got three players there who can cause a lot of damage if you give them the space. And I think Liverpool will look at the goal he conceded. You know, there's a number of players there who probably should and could.
They're all
be
out
better.
Of position as well, weren't they?
You know, from the corner, yeah.
Absolutely. And it starts from the Canase header, and then you've got Trent out, and it doesn't get back in quick enough and stuff. So, yeah, there's lots of things you could unpick there. But again, you know, physical fatigue, mental fatigue can all be a factor at this stage of the season. In terms of, you know, where we are right now, I can't believe there's people, you know, chucking this in, thinking it's done and dusted. It's not done and dusted. I mean, don't get me wrong, Liverpool now are clearly second favourites for it, and City are massive favourites for it. But I made the mistake in December, January, writing these lads off and saying it was done, and it wasn't done. And they made a show of me by coming back and putting on an unbelievable sequence of results that has seen them what only drop points against Chelsea, City, and now Spurs. That's one hell of a run. To be doing that across all competitions, by the way, and let's not pretend like City haven't faltered. They haven't faltered in the league, but they faltered in the FA Cup. They made significant changes that day. It weakened them. We punished them. They go out against Madrid. This is really hard to do, what Liverpool have done. And I think there's still an opportunity. And Paul's right, you know, that, you know, I had a shook hands yesterday at 1-0 when City go ahead and just thought, right, let's just get out Newcastle at 1-0 because that could be the big thing, you know, the goal difference stuff. Because I think, you know, if we were sitting here right now and we had their fixtures, we were going to Molineux at 8:15 on Wednesday night, I'd be thinking, fucking hell, it's not ideal, that. And I know Wolves have dropped off a little bit and people were saying, maybe they're on the beach, but then they come back in the 97th minute against Chelsea at the weekend. So if a team are on the beach, they probably don't get that result because they're not arsed. So maybe there's something where they want to put on a bit of a show for their own supporters, both them and West Ham.
West Ham needs something.
I said it the other day, Neil, never ever underestimate a team's will and desire to spoil a party and just to become a headline.
Well, West Ham needs something. You know, they've got United up there. They want to play European football next season. They've just had a great time. West Ham needs something, I think.
West Ham can be a place where it can be very, very uncomfortable. If you catch them on their good day, really tough place to go. The same for Wolves as well. We've had them, you know, many a tough encounter there. Yes, we usually come out on top, but they are really, really tough games. City have had their own problems going there in the past. So they're three fixtures that they've got. And I know we've got Villa away and they've got Villa at home, but Villa have won more games away from home than they have won at home. But we've got to do our job. We've got to do and take care of our business on Tuesday night.
He's exciting me, yeah.
he's right, but everyone is right to still be excited. You know, Liverpool have got five remaining games, and if they win all five, there's a pretty decent chance they'll end up with four trophies, and that's an insane situation that we're still in. You've got to win all five. 4-2-4 made sense when he does it. There's I think then he's got a bit of a problem as it wears on, because while 4-2-4 made sense, I think first and foremost, Harriet Shimikas comes on, loves crossing. It's like he's
that was the last thing we needed, more crossing.
Bobby Cross, as far as I'm concerned, absolutely loves crossing. But the other thing that happens, and it is maybe something to think about, is Jota just is ineffective from the bench, really is. And you end up in a situation where I was with Andy for the match, and I said to Andy, when you got to 78, I said, his problem here is he probably quite like to throw Divock on, but the player he most like to sub is probably Jota. And that's mad, because you can't do that. I'm not saying for a second he should have done that, but that's the way in which it goes. When he makes those subs, for me, it makes sense. I'm not for a set. It doesn't work. And that's the point. It makes sense, but it doesn't work.
I think the Jota one works for the 4-2-4, yeah, because I feel like we needed to give them something else to think about, and we needed someone else in and around the box to basically trouble them. It didn't really happen, did it? And Jota didn't really come in and trouble them. I think part of that is a physicality thing, literally the stature of the Tottenham defenders and the fact that they were just there in the air, and every single ball getting crossed, they headed out. But also, I would have put Origi on. I don't understand why he wasn't. I mean, there was literally shouts.
Who would you took off?
I mean, I probably wouldn't have brought Jota on, but then that maybe would have been too early.
So you would have brought Origi on?
I think I would have brought Origi on to start with.
That never happened.
Yeah, and I thought that the Naby substitution a bit later on was a bit random. And I understand that he maybe brought him on to try and control the game a bit more. I think Fabinho could have, I understand everything they tried to do. The problem for me is that even when you had that new formation and you had more players driving forward, because of what you mentioned there, the fact that Tottenham do have such a threat in behind, we never really felt like we could fully push on and fully commit to pushing on, because they had something like Tottenham came and did what a lot of teams come to Anfield and do. They came and they put up a low block, but they have far better players than a Watford, for example, to be able to do that and for that to work. Plus they have Kane sitting there ready to take on the ball if they break quickly, Son as well. So it felt like sort of the perfect storm for Liverpool, where they didn't feel like they could fully commit players forward because of the attacking threat, but nothing was really working in the attacking area either.
It was the first game I think we felt the Firmino absence.
Yeah,
usually he was the sub. That was he was the sub when you were going to 4-2-4. It was never Jota. I think Jota's. If he gets one chance. If you could pick anyone on the whole out of our whole squad, one chance I give it to Jota, but I think he's the best finisher at the club. However, in terms of impact in the game, it was nowhere.
On that, I think it's really interesting, because I think it's almost, for me, I don't think any of Salah, Mane or Jota, when they play up front, are number nines, pure number nines. I think Firmino is interesting, because I think he can be a pure number nine. He's also a false nine. But I think Mane, Salah and Jota, they're almost a little bit different. Like, it's hard to categorise them. I agree with you in that. I think if Firmino being on the bench, I think firstly, the manager would have gone to him. And secondly, I think it would have been better than Jota was. 100%. But I sort of feel as though that it would have been absolutely fine just to have a lad who's just playing number nine. And that's why the Origi thing in the end, you know, it would have been great to get him on for a period of time. And as I say, I completely understand how the manager ends up where he ends up. I can see how he goes through the Choose Your Own Adventure book, opens these pages and ends up at this point. I'm not criticising it for a second, but for me, I'd just quite like someone to go and play number nine, please, for Liverpool.
Well, you'd almost had a similar game with the Everton game, and that was as you've got that formation, you're trying to disturb it. Well, how are you going to do it? Let's put Divock in and create a bit of madness. And he went for Jota, and I don't think Jota's madness. I think Jota, you know, if they're breaking on you, Jota can carry the ball away. Whatever, but Salah can do that, Mane can do that, Diaz can do that. I think you needed something different, and I felt like Jota was just more of the same.
It's difficult though, isn't it? Because Jota is the fourth highest goal scorer in the league.
Literally in the league.
So if you're the manager and he's sitting
looking
next
for
to
a
you
goal,
and he's scored that many goals this season, I can totally see why he's looked at him and gone, I'm throwing you into it. I think the problem is,
I feel like a long time ago though, since he was that player.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think there is some reasons for that. He's not been getting as much game time. And I think my issue was that the penalty box was so crowded. And I think Jota was almost, he was very conscious of that. And therefore he was outside the box a lot. And I'm thinking, well, you're probably not going to score there, mate, in fairness. So that was a problem. But the Divock thing for me, like, I think Naby Keita's, oh, he's been really, really good recently. But I didn't see the point in that. And I know your point about Fabinho, and I guess we'll never know whether he was at the point of just, you know, completely being He looked shot to bits. And maybe he was, but there wasn't long left. And I'm thinking, by then, all I'm looking for them to
like
do
nine left,
is just keep turning the ball over, keep facilitating it. So the Divock one, for the last, whatever it was, 6, 7, 8 minutes, would have made sense for me, because all of a sudden you've got to lad in there. Off? I probably would have took Mane off. Because you couldn't have got another forward. And I think it would have been, you know, back to your point, getting a point was massive. And it was worth the roll of the dice, I think, to try and get the win, but not to the extent where you suddenly leave yourself completely wide open. You had to be a bit sensible about it, because that point, whilst it felt like a blow walking up the ground, as we just described before, their fixtures aren't, they're not the fixtures you'd handpick for the last three. So that point could be huge. The Diaz goal could be massively significant to Liverpool. So it was important they didn't lose it, but it just felt someone like Divock, because of all the, as Paul says, the madness he potentially brings and what he's done over previous seasons, I was massively surprised to see him not introduced.
You mentioned Diaz, Ian. Excellent again. It's terrific how much he makes things happen. On top of that, that's my sort of thing with him. On top of all the sheer quality that he obviously possesses, he's just perpetually involved, and he's remarkably dynamic. He has a good chance just before as well with the header as it comes across. He makes 4-2-4 easier too. You know, he's, for me, he's able to grab games.
It's hard to think of another player, and I don't just mean from a Liverpool perspective, that's come into the league and just hit the ground running the way he has. I think he's been absolutely phenomenal. I said it a number of weeks ago. If you're picking, you know, your forward options and your forward threats, for me, he's the first one I'm picking at the minute. And I include everyone in that, you know, include Mohamed Salah, who's had a phenomenal season. I think it's fine to say he's gone off the boil a bit in the last few weeks. Certainly since the AFCON, there's been flashes, but by no means the kind of standards and the performances that he was putting in before the AFCON. I just think Diaz has been absolutely sensational. There doesn't seem to be anything he can't do, nearly. And he can be a physical threat when he needs to be. He can run at defenders. You know, he can beat a man. He's got great pace, so he offers you something slightly different. I know others have got pace, but I think he's a level above, I think, in terms of his acceleration. I just think he's been one hell of an addition. Such an exciting footballer. I think, you know, if Liverpool end up with multiple trophies, I think you can look back at that signing and say, right, he ignited an awful lot of that. He just kicked us on another level. He gave us another option when you need it. And you can't have enough quality options in that final third. I think he's been absolutely superb.
He was the only one that was really running at them as well, wasn't he? Like when you go away and you reflect on that and you look at the forwards, he was the only one I felt ever really caused a problem, because he actually wanted to go free. He actually felt like he had a bit more room to do that. And the rest of them, not doing them down, but just felt like they never really had a proper go, or they never had the room to have a proper go, or they never wanted to try and have a proper go. It felt like the rest of the forward line didn't really work except him, and he was sort of the shining light in it, wasn't he?
There's so much more to come from him, you know. And that's the bit that I could see in him. But
how can you leave him out now? That's the thing. Like, how could you leave him on the bench?
No,
we're doing all this. I don't think he's starting Tuesday. Just as a point, but go on.
Possibly, well, but you know, he's 25, and we've got a long time of him to look forward to, and that for me in itself is great. But I think you're going to see more goals come from him, and we're starting to see some goals, but I think we're going to see potential bucketfuls of goals from him in the future. Ian sort of noted all the exciting things he does. The boring thing he does is he's so smart, he's so safe with it sometimes, which is not typical of a player in that position. No. It really isn't.
I think it actually makes him hard to defend as well, because he might just go there. Do you know what I mean? If you want to show him there, you could just go there. And if Liverpool have got another really good player, now you've opened up space for that.
There's players who play that position who all they know is, right, I'm going to run a fullback. I'm going to do that. They're like a, you know, a dog with a toy or something. They're just going to do the same thing, rinse and repeat. Whereas, okay, I might run at you, Mr. Fullback, or I'm just going to take the simple option and I'm going to play it to Thiago and move, or just lay it off. He's so smart with it for a lad who's also not been here that long. He looks like he's played 300 games for Liverpool. He looks like he's been here as long as Mane and Salah, which is, you know, a testament to him. However, in terms of who you're starting first, yes, him, a million miles him. The others, I think, in current form, it's him, Mane, and honestly, I don't care who else. I think Salah's form at the moment is bordering on shocking.
Do you? Why? Because I think Salah's the most patrolled footballer in the league. So they've got three around him at all times. And I'm not saying, I don't think he's doing it, he's handling it absolutely brilliantly. But if you start not picking Salah, all you're going to do is say to the opposition, you can just relax on that side.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think you can relax on that side, because I think the other footballers are very, very good as well. I've got to a point where everything I've just said about Diaz and about being smart, I think Mo's stopped doing recently, and he's trying to force it. I've said this a number of times on the Anfield Rap that he's a player that lives in his head so much. He strives for perfection, and that makes him the unbelievable footballer he is, has been, and will continue to be. However, when he gets so much inside his head, he makes stupid decisions, and I think that's where we're at with him.
So I think the forcing a thing, so I think that's something that's quite different in that. I take your point on running at people, but I think Salah was running at people. There's a couple of times he gets past a couple and he's sort of gliding in, and then what you want him to do is pop it and then see if you get it back or let them go somewhere else. And there was a couple of times where I was frustrated with what I feel and I'm sure if Mo Salah sat there, he'd laugh in my face, because for Mo Salah and Mo Salah's head, these aren't speculative efforts.
Yeah.
But with his current form, they become speculative efforts. And what I think, if you've managed to get yourself that, so where I was and why I'm not, I think Salah plays quite well, differently to you, but I think he then blunts himself, which I think is where we agree. Mm. I think there's a couple of times where he works himself the space, and I'm like, you've done well there, because right in front of where we were at the cop second half, and he gets himself the space, and I think, fuck, he's got himself the space, he's surrounded by three, he's come out with the ball, what's he going to do? Oh, he's done the fucking stupid thing.
But look,
that was
decision making, isn't it? Less than his actual play. But I feel like that was a problem for the whole team yesterday. The decision making was off. Like there was, especially in the last 10, when all you want to do is keep the ball in play, and the decision making was awful, and then it gives the Tottenham goalkeeper five more minutes to waste time.
Love giving them a goal kick.
It was Salah's decision making that final ball that just wasn't there yesterday. I actually do take your point. He was trying to find a bit of space and run at them, but then the ball ended up.
Trying's fine. End product is what the business is in, you know, and that's the thing we've always been able to count upon him for. He doesn't help himself and his image sometimes, where, you know, he's always been a more selfish player than the others, and I've never had any issue with it. But when you're not in form, just do the sensible thing.
But what I think, just on that, I think there's loads of evidence, even in very recent games, when the other bits haven't been working for him, of the way he passes the ball. So for instance, the opening goal against Everton comes from him getting his head up, seeing it and hitting it, and I think he just got into this sort of vein of, but I think it was as much because of what the rest of the team was doing as well. That's why before when I said that thing about the start of the second half, it's Trent and it's Thiago. If that had been Mane or Diaz or Salah, I'd go, well, they're forwards, they're going to have shots. My point was the whole Liverpool team was doing what Salah was doing, and then Salah starts to do it even more, and then I was just like, Jesus, can we all stop this, please? Because it's by picking the pass, and that's what Salah at his very best is incredible at. I think he's the best way to pass on our team. I think his through balls, his crosses, the way he weights them is absolutely incredible. He creates so much with that. And it just felt, Ian, like he just sort of decided that was just never quite going to be on. And I was frustrated by that. Maybe it wasn't on, and maybe, you know, it is the right thing occasionally to have a go. I'm not saying that's not the case. But for me, over and over, and that's why I'd keep picking him. And I'll say it again, I think he's playing really well until he gets around the penalty area. And then I'm beginning to be a bit like, you've just got to be better here, because we need you to be better, because you're the best one at this bit.
Yeah, I think it's difficult when you're going into Tuesday's game. And I think, you know, you still want to go as strong as you possibly can, but you're going to have to, I suppose, understand that one or two might need a bit of a breather. And it's not necessarily a case of protecting them before the FA Cup final, because for me, Tuesday is just, it's such an important game, because you've got to put the pressure back on them.
Yep.
But you might just need to look at where lads are in terms of that red zone and stuff. I actually think Salah starts okay against Spurs, but, you know, your point about him being patrolled is absolutely right. I do think there's something in his decision making, and don't get me wrong, Mohamed Salah is an elite level footballer. I think the point about Luis Diaz that Paul makes, I have been so impressed by his decision making, because I think that does sometimes just separate, you know, really, really good players to, like, you know, the world's best, or what may end up becoming the world's best, because they know when to give, they know when to go. And Salah absolutely is that player. You know, he is a world-class footballer, no doubt about it. He has been for a number of years. But I do think he's in a tricky patch at the minute. And I think maybe he is trying to force it a little bit and almost think that the onus is on him. And because he is the standout player and has been for so long, you can understand why you might think that. But I think sometimes you have got to play percentages, and he's just trying to do that little bit too much.
He's another reason why I'd have brought Origi on. in that you've seen repeatedly. Wolves away is a really good example. He links up well with Origi, and Origi creates some space for him in that sort of batter and ramish way, where Origi will just go and he'll go and occupy that centre back who wants to come out and play that side against him. I thought it was interesting that they make the change, I think, because Salah is beginning to get in. They do Sessegnon to pull Davies to that side, because Sessegnon's been booked and Salah's beginning to get in.
It's a great change from Conte that I felt.
Really, really good change. Took the pressure of the yellow card off. Gave Sanchez there, who can run as well. But that's where I was back thinking, that's why I'd love to have had Origi to just go and occupy those little bits. Say to Salah, I'm just a wall pass for you, mate. Yeah. You hit me, I'll put it back to you. And we'll just do that a few times. And these won't be able to cope.
You saw it in the derby, where it worked exactly like that, where Origi was very much that. Just give it to me, I'll hold it. Give it to you back. You can put a ball in the box. I also thought the setup in terms of where Trent positioned himself, certainly second half, it was doing us no favours at all. And I think Trent had a really, really poor game in the main. But actually, there was times where you're thinking, you could go outside, you know, you're playing in that little space there, but it's just so congested. It's not really working for anyone. And I think Liverpool, looking back, reflecting on the game, they'll look at some of that and think, we could have done a little bit more, we could have stretched him a little bit more, we could have tried to get around the back a little bit more and just changed the angle of the cross a little
Henderson
bit.
Henderson kept going there, no one was using him, and it was quite frustrating.
Yeah, so I think that was, you know, that's something that we'll maybe have to look at a little bit, but, you know, you keep going back to decision making. It just wasn't quite right.
Yeah, it was just a stretching the pitching for me. I was going to say Henderson did keep going out wide and was literally screaming at points for the ball, and no one was using him, and that was annoying, because it felt like playing through the middle just wasn't really working. I didn't really understand Henderson. He did come off, didn't he?
Yeah.
I didn't really understand that, because I didn't think he was the one I would have taken off.
Who would you have taken off?
Fabinho probably a bit earlier, and put Henderson into the six, because just purely because Fabinho looked a bit like he needed a rest, to be honest. And then you're looking ahead to Tuesday, aren't you, and what we're going to do. But I actually felt yesterday's game, when was it? It wasn't even yesterday, was
Saturday.
It?
You keep saying yesterday, but it's fine. People
do
are fine. Yeah, it's fine.
Saturday's game. It felt like a good warm-up for next Saturday, because it just feels like Chelsea are going to have a similar setup, aren't they, with a similar calibre. Yeah, but they're not quite the same level as Chelsea, yeah. So it feels like we're going to have to find a solution for this before Tuesday, and then before Saturday again.
Just quick on the fullbacks, Ian there mentioned that Trent Alexander-Arnold doesn't play well. I think it's one of his poorer games of the season. He was very frustrated at the final whistle as well, which I thought was interesting. Like he knew, like I'm not saying anything here that Trent Alexander-Arnold himself doesn't know when he walks off that pitch and goes down into the dressing room. He does Robertson for Bobby Cross in there earlier in the half. We ask a lot of them. Is the one thing I would say, and we ask a lot of them to be doing it all the time. If there was anyone, and I genuinely don't feel as though it was one too many. Genuinely, I know why some people do. I genuinely don't feel like it was one too many for most of those players. The players who I think it might have been one too many for are the two fullbacks. I think they maybe had a bit of an air of one too many. I felt everyone else, things weren't going perfectly, but they were doing so much of the other stuff right in terms of where they were winning it back, what the next phase was. It did, you know.
Did you mean physically?
Physically and mentally to a degree. I think that the lack of creativity might be a bit of a mental thing, that the decision making might be just a little bit of being worn down. But you know, City have just won 5-0 against Newcastle. They crawled off the pitch against us at the Etihad. They crawled off the pitch at Wembley. They'd made those changes, and they were shot in Madrid. They really were. Whenever I see City, our result gives them
a bounce. Don't
If
they're going into that Newcastle game and we've just fucking pumped Spurs all over the show,
Pep's team talk sorted, isn't it?
The minute Liverpool draw, you can imagine City's dressing room or wherever they are.
But that's
night, they're all bouncing, aren't they, going into that game? So
yeah, all that weight from that game was taken away by the Liverpool result. That was one of the biggest sadnesses, because I think if you'd have won that, then you are nervous, aren't you, going into it?
But the fullbacks do look. To me, the fullbacks are the ones who look. If there's anyone who looks as though they're just finding a bit of a drag at them, the fullbacks.
Yeah, they have been managed. I mean, you have seen Joe Gomez in a couple of games recently, and you have seen Tsimikas.
Trent doesn't play Newcastle.
No, he doesn't. So, but the whole weight of the whole season is on them, and they do cover the most ground as well, don't they? So does that. Trent wasn't great. I don't think you needed to tell him that in his performance. He suffered. Robertson and then what do you call him, Bobby Cross. I'm a fan of Tsimikas. He has got loads of them, but I actually think he has. I think if you ask people outside Liverpool who the best crosser of the ball is at the club, I think they would tell you it's Trent, but I actually think it might well be him. Tsimikas, I think he puts in certainly corners, puts the best corner in, and I think he's a fantastic crosser of a ball. However, I just think that plays into Tottenham's hands.
I don't think you see either fullbacks tomorrow. I think they both, well, Robertson and Trent both get a rest.
Do you?
I don't like the two. I don't like resting the two fullbacks.
I think you'll do one on one.
He's done it before, and it's not worked. So I think that might be in his head a little bit. No, Trent does get the rest against Newcastle. You can get carried away a little bit sometimes. Players can just have bad games as well. It isn't always related to physical or mental fatigue. So I think it's important to say that he might have just had one of them where it's a poor performance. So I'd be, and I don't want to jump ahead too much here, but I'd be resting Robertson against Villa. I'd probably play Trent. I think you still need one of the fullbacks.
Because Robertson got took off, I think you're going to see Gomez tomorrow, and I think you'll see Tsimikas at Southampton. And I think they'll both play at the weekend. Possibly.
I mean, the Henderson thing, again, maybe there was something pre-planned there where he thought, well, I'm going to have to use Henderson against Villa, and he may be thinking about giving Fabinho a rest at some point because he's played a lot of games. I don't really think he's one who's missed out that often recently. He seems to have played and played Fabinho, so maybe he's thinking about Henderson in the six against Villa. I don't know.
Henderson starts in the six against Newcastle again.
Yeah, he does, to be fair. And I think actually Henderson against certain opposition is absolutely fine in the six, by the way. So maybe that's something he's thinking about for Villa.
I know where we sit now, we don't even want to think about it, but there is the potential for a dead rubber fixture as well. And that's, the manager will have that in his mind, I'm sure, that one of these games, maybe Wolves, might not matter. So that's an opportunity to rest players ahead of what is the big game. However, you can't count on that, and I really, really, really don't want him to be able to count on that.
Can't do that yet, can he?
No, you can't do that yet.
The other thing is, in amongst all of his thoughts, plans, is Chelsea might, there's a strong argument Chelsea goes 120. That's just the reality of where we live, but he's got five subs in the FA Cup final. But there is a strong chance Chelsea goes 120, Harry, tonight. That's why it wouldn't surprise me, for instance, if possibly even both fullbacks start against Villa, but then one of them gets took off, and then one of them doesn't start the final, the FA Cup final. You know, possibly Robertson doesn't start the FA Cup final, Tsimikas does, off the base of the manager's thinking, well, I'm going to bring him on 16, he's going to do me the second hour and not the first hour. I think that, like, this is what the manager now needs to begin to factor in, and that's worth bearing in mind when you're talking about any of his decisions, including the subs. Like, this is all such fine margin stuff at this point as to what he's going to do.
I think the manager will be planning to have both fullbacks on the pitch for the FA Cup final, at least from the start, because I just think that he knows that he's going to want his best starting 11. I think he does look to rest one, if not two, tomorrow night. I don't necessarily think Trent looked tired at the weekend. That's the sort of problem. I think maybe it was just the quality of his performance and his crosses that just weren't good. I don't necessarily think he looked like he needed a rest. So I don't know. I think the fact that he brings Tsimikas on suggests to me that you might be seeing him from the start tomorrow. But I think both of them for the cup final. There's no way for me that Tsimikas is starting at Wembley.
I was happy with the team against Spurs. I think I pretty much said that's what I'd pick when we did Tor Live, but I'd have played Matip. I'm surprised he didn't go with Matip against Tottenham, just because I think sometimes if you've got a centre-half who's really, really comfortable bringing it out, it can just open a little bit more space. You're all of a sudden drawing someone towards you. There's a bit more room and stuff. So I'm surprised he didn't go with Matip. Obviously, it leads you down the path of thinking he'll play him against Villa. But I thought that's one way maybe the... I wouldn't say he got it wrong, because I think Canati's been really, really good this season in the main. You know, you could have a little look at the goal and stuff, and it's a misplaced header maybe. But I think the Matip one was maybe one I would have done against Spurs, and then maybe play Canati against Villa.
I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and it'll get as close to a predicted team as a group. Do you think Milner might start against Villa?
No.
I don't think so.
I think he will.
Okay. Do you think he might go 4-2-4 from the outset against Villa?
No.
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 Okay. Do you think that Diaz will start against Villa?
No.
That's a tough one. I think Diaz starts and Salah doesn't.
I start Diaz.
But do you think he will?
I think he will, yeah.
Okay.
I think he has to, Neil. He's the most informed. I think it'd be wrong not to start Diaz.
Firmino comes in from nowhere, given the fact that he's been back in training, or do you think he comes in from the bench?
Yes, that's why I think he's not on the bench at the weekend. I think he starts.
I don't think he'll start. I think he'll come in from the bench.
I think it's a tough one to answer, isn't it? Because you don't know where he is in terms of being able to start the match, but I suspect it might be from the bench.
We all agree that Keita's starting.
Yeah.
Which two of... And you've ruled apart from Harriet.
I've got a wild card on that one. Go I think on. Jones might start.
Okay. Have you got a wild card? Has anyone got a wild card?
I think Henderson starts and then
you haven't seen
Milner.
Jones for a while, and he likes to keep them going. And I think that's where my Jones thoughts come from.
Yeah, I wouldn't massively disagree with that. I mean, he'll have an eye on, you know, where Thiago is fitness-wise. I think you've always got to be conscious that he is someone who, less so recently, can pick up the odd knock. And I think they'll be careful with him. You know, Fabinho, not too dissimilar to that. I'd like to think he can get two out of the three of Fabinho, Thiago and Henderson on the pitch, but I do take Paul's point. I wouldn't be surprised if Jones started.
Do you think that Jota starts?
Yeah.
I think he will, yeah.
Okay. All right, then. I think your group team, broadly speaking.
We did very disagree, though. So.
Yeah, I think you did all right. I think your group team... do you think Salah starts? He doesn't think Salah starts. Do you think Salah starts?
I think
Jota's right of Firmino and Diaz.
I don't like him right either.
I think you'll see Mane and Salah on the bench.
Mane starting.
There's a chance he could let Salah have a rest for this one, and he, you know, then he's got a decision about who he puts on the right hand side. I don't particularly like Jota there, to be honest. I mean, Mane could go there. He's done it before for us and done it really, really well. Be a difficult conversation, I think, to leave Salah out, because I think he just wants to play all the time. But I think, you know, you can see some sense in it given the recent performances.
He does get a rest at Newcastle, Salah, doesn't he? But I think that's the only thing where I think, oh, was that his rest and that was it for the rest of the season. And you can, as
who starts against Newcastle up front?
It's
Diaz, right?
Jota
and Mane.
Mane, yeah.
Yeah, okay. This is why you don't pick teams by committee, but broadly speaking, there's expectations around Henderson and Keita in the midfield too. I think everyone thinks Mata will start centre-half next to Van Dijk. You've got Alisson in there as well. Jota to start seems to have come through. One of Milner or Jones to be an unlikely addition into the heart of that midfield from a Liverpool point of view. The room wants Diaz to start and we'll go from there, and then maybe Sadio Mane as well. It might be quite similar to Newcastle. Actually, where you've ended up, if you've ended up anywhere, is quite similar to Newcastle.
That's 100% what I'm thinking.
And with the full-back chat as well.
They've got to get the balance right, though, haven't they? I mean, obviously, there's a you've got to maybe rest one or two, but at the same time, you've got to take care of business on Tuesday, because what you can't have happen is not win that game and then all of a sudden City drop points the following night, honestly.
What I think he won for Villa is what he didn't really have at the weekend was a huge impact from the bench. It's the first game where I didn't think he had a stick of dynamite on the bench, and I think that was missing.
Okay, excellent stuff as well. But also, Paul's also said earlier on he's got absolutely battered them because goal difference is a thing. So it's difficult for the Liverpool manager right now. Thank you very much to Harry Pryor, to Paul Senior, to Ian Ryan, Andy Heaton for producing. It has been the Anfield Wrap this week. Expect the unexpected is what I would say for the next two. Sports Social Podcast Network.